Welcome to this week's episode of the First Movers Podcast. We'll be speaking to Pedro Conchar, head of the startup program here at Maastricht University, and talking about his work in building the ecosystem here in Limburg. Pedro has a very inspiring philosophy and a lot of cool ideas and new initiatives, including a special announcement at the end of the episode that might be interesting for you if you want to start and grow your company. Make sure you listen to this episode. We hope you enjoy.
Pedro, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Could you maybe explain a little bit about yourself and your career journey?
All right, yeah. So first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's been a very nice chance and opportunity to stop and like reflect on the previous period. So I brought actually some notes with me because there's so much to say. As you already mentioned, my name is Predrag. I'm originally from Serbia. I moved to the Netherlands 2018. Before I moved here, I quit my job, excellent job that I had in 2007 because I wanted to start my own business. So I've been working since 2007 until my move here in the video games industry, where I collaborated with many Dutch and American developers, and I developed more than 46 video games. But my interests changed over time, and I was much more interested in innovation and like how can we apply new technologies for the benefit of everyone. So when I moved to the Netherlands, I started an augmented reality company, and things escalated really quickly. So to cut a long story short, we raised three investment rounds, we built a product, I suddenly found myself in a role of a CEO of a proper company. And since I'm an innovation guy, I was never really interested in sales. Given this, in December 2023, I have decided to step off from a position of a CEO and focus more on a regional ecosystem and how can I use my experience to help other startups. In March last year, I have found out that the Center for Entrepreneurship at Maastricht University is looking for a head of a startup program. And when I read the job description, I was literally saying like, oh my God, they're literally talking about me. I met them, they said, yeah, we're talking about you. And I started working in March 23 as a head of a startup program. And I work closely with Roy Brusma, Anita Van Hills, and Rim Strux. So my role at the Center for Entrepreneurship is to work on a daily basis, one-to-one, tailor-made feedback with student startups. That's to cut the long story short.
So it's really taking the experience that you get from your own time in entrepreneurship and you try to help startups now with that experience.
Yes, indeed. In fact, when I saw your podcast title, First Moves, you know, and then I know that there are questions like what was your first move and everything else. And actually, I have a specific life philosophy where I believe that every important move that you make should feel like it is your first move towards something different in the future, you know. So I see that this new position, relatively new, I'm almost a year there, is a kind of a new move for me, but a very interesting opportunity like to contribute in a new way. So it's a new experience for me. So it's also a first move for me.
Yeah. How have the first 10 months been of being in that position?
I want to say calm and organized, but it's a creative mess. It's crazy when you're having an ecosystem, a growing ecosystem. Now we have around approximately 100 startups here being active, and a very small, very enthusiastic, but very small team trying to support them. So it's been hectic, I have to say, but in a positive way, right? So it's like the whole environment is very inspiring. The whole team is acting as a startup themselves or ourselves. And we kind of are all independent in our decisions. It's like a very horizontal organization, right? So given this, there is a lot of possibilities to put like a microstructure. So not like a all like top-down approach where you have like a specific policy and it applies to everyone, because every startup is unique, every person is unique. And in that sense, everyone requires, of course, there are common things, shared problems, but there are like specific characteristics for each startup or each person, and then you have to address it one-on-one and have a kind of a tailor-made approach. And that adds complexity to the whole thing. So in that sense, yeah, I can tell a little bit about the Center for Entrepreneurship and what we actually do there. I know that my colleague Roy Grossman was already a guest, so he told something about it. But in general, Center for Entrepreneurship deals with, it has three pillars, as like centers of focus, and one is education, another one is incubation or startups, and the third one is innovation, where we focus more on helping SMEs in any possible way, including establishing new collaborations with the student startups, right? So we're trying to cross the, like all three pillars and make them intertwined. So in that sense, I am focused only on the second pillar, on the incubation, where our goal is through various initiatives to support student startups from a super early stage. So literally all you have to have is a idea written on the back of a napkin or whatever, you know, and come to us, and we're going to help you put a little bit of a structure on it, to give you a push, to connect you with the right people, to help you gain exposure, but also to help you articulate your product or service, and like help you analyze, is there really a market for this, you know? So yeah, but in general, I would be saying that our approach is always people's first. And I can explain later why I'm focusing on people's first. And that's actually every time I meet a new startup, most of them come ready. They come with laptops. They're like, we have PowerPoint, we have a business plan, we have this and that. And for me, this is not a proper approach for the first introduction. Why? Because you are working on your product, you're working on your service, on your idea, and you're slowly creating like a box around you, because you have a like your own unique perspective on how it should be. And for me, I'm trying not to allow you to pull me in. So I'm like being a little bit disruptive on the first meeting. I interrupt, I say, okay, don't, let's not go with the slides. Let me ask you questions. Let's imagine like I'm exploring some unknown phenomenon now, and I'm asking various questions. And this gives me a different insight into, you know, like what it is that you are doing, and does it really make sense? In many cases, it does make sense, but with slight alterations, right? So, to go a little bit more like in like practical terms, besides this one-on-one support, Center for Entrepreneurship is also one of the founders and active participant in the Broadlands Startup League, which is a very important initiative for the region. Since you are already aware, we have four Broadlands campuses, and given the fact that they're all focused on specific sectors and verticals, naturally they evolved as kind of a separate communities. With the idea that they're, of course, going to collaborate and communicate together. So now we're at the stage where we said, okay, for the whole region, it's beneficial that we put this collaboration to the new level. So, you know, like there are many things that are happening that are like parallel initiatives. And then you have a scenario where, you know, imagine a group of kids throwing firecrackers, right? And then everyone throws one firecracker. But if we join forces, we like tie them together, we're going to make a big boom. So this is the idea behind it. It's not to put a new top-down policy, strict things. It's more like, how do we make this like an organic network that evolves in a, like a very natural way, you know, in response to the circumstances in the region. So that's Brightland Startup League. And then as a very enthusiastic participant in this initiative, we have decided that our other initiative, Maastricht University Challenge, which is already the largest challenge in the region in terms of like startups, we are rebranding it now to Brightland's Startup Challenge, and we are opening the doors for other universities at this moment, including Zaid and Fontis and all the others in the region. And in the future, we are planning not to open up only for other universities, but also to have a special category for non-student startups. So it's going to become, our hope is that it is going to evolve into like a regional startup challenge as like one of the driving engines for like very early stage, right? And then yeah, that's kind of the gist of what we're doing. And it sounds like there are only like a couple of initiatives, but these initiatives are like branching into multiple smaller activities, and it becomes more than a full-time job. Yeah. So yeah, that's so recently we've been focusing more and more on ecosystem design. So that's a kind of very interesting topic. And yeah.
What do you mean with ecosystem design? Because you were speaking about Brightlands and the different campuses they have, and this firecracker metaphor, which I think was really nice. Yeah. And indeed, you said you want it to happen organically, but at the same time, there needs to be some kind of alignment to make the big bomb. So how do you go about that process?
There is a possibility. I actually have to say that I've been learning a lot from Paul Crutzen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know about him, but he's a person who initiated Kaski Startup Community, which was one of the defining moments for me when I joined Kaski Community. He is kind of, in his own way, insisting that the collaboration is the essence of everything. That if you have a group of smart, ambitious people and you put them together, even if some of them don't have revolutionary ideas or whatever we perceive as like an archetype of a successful startup, you just need to put them together in the same space, and naturally, organically, the collaboration happens. And then excellent ideas, excellent initiatives start popping out. Mm-hmm. So if we apply this to the whole region instead of only one startup community, we might actually have alignment that happens organically. Mm-hmm. Of course, every alignment requires a little bit of a push, you know, and that's actually where the storytelling comes, you know. So before I say why storytelling is important, let's talk a little bit about entrepreneurial ecosystem and what it really is, you know, because when we are talking about entrepreneurial ecosystem, we are talking about people, we are talking about the power of storytelling, as I mentioned, but we're also talking about game theory and network science. Yeah. This is something that is unavoidable topic when you talk about the ecosystem, you know, and then when you observe the whole ecosystem, you can observe it as a network of nodes or agents, active participants in a specific game, right? And all the connections between them. And then, of course, you have some central nodes that are mostly connected or mostly almost like gatekeepers, influential in the at least one area of the network, you know? So evolving this network actually requires one overhyped word, and that is disruption, you know? And when I say disruption, I don't mean in that overhyped way. I literally mean if you want the network or the ecosystem to evolve in a positive way, right, you need to alter the connections that are happening inside, right? Yeah, so you can start making new connections, or you can actually say, okay, let's break this one and assemble them in a different way. So it's a little bit philosophical, you know, but in general, it easily can be translated to practice. So that's what, as a step one, this is what we are doing with the Brighton Startup League, right? Okay, let's reformulate existing connections and let's see how can we connect in a new way. And then, going back to the network science, right, there is one thing, and that is the network is always more than a sum of its elements or nodes in this case. And so then this difference between individual, the sum of individual capabilities and what the network actually can do, it's like an emergent phenomenon. So that's kind of, if you go back to biology, right, that's how they explain the emergence of life also, right? So now if we want to give new life to the ecosystem, we should start making more connections and more capabilities within the network that can organically allow new emergent properties to appear.
I have a follow-up question, because I think the network theory, of course, it's very easy because it's often visualized just with dots and lines connecting them.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, a lot of people also just stress making new connections. Mm-hmm. But I think you raised a very important point, which is redefining the nature of the connection.
Indeed.
And I think that is something that is extremely overlooked, because you only have so many nodes to play with.
Yeah.
When you're geographically restricted, let's say. Yes. Or you're waiting for other ones to spontaneously appear. But that could be a slow process.
Or you bring them in.
Could also be.
Yes.
But that process of kind of redefining the connection between these different nodes, I think that actually relates a lot to my work, which then we'll have a conversation about soon. how do you go about that process, and where do you try to leverage the value in redefining those connections? What does that look like practically as well, so that people can get an understanding of what that is?
Okay, so then we come to the fact why I put emphasis always on people first, you know. Because once we accept the fact that everything starts with the people, you know, and their willingness to participate in these cooperative games, right? When they see the benefit of actually participating in these cooperative games, then you realize how much of a power actual storytelling has, you know. And this is not about, when I say storytelling, I don't mean telling fairy tales. I'm saying telling realistic stories. Right. So this is where it starts. Actually, one of the famous writers that sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I disagree, but you all know Harari, right? He talks about the power of storytelling and how much it actually affects the world around us and how much power it has to change the reality, right? So for me, it's like, you know, like if you start with the idea of how the ecosystem should evolve, right? Then you start with a storytelling. When you're a startup founder, you know, like you don't have nothing at the beginning. You only have your storytelling. You have an excellent idea. You're like, okay, I'm going to change the world, right? With this, or I'm going to help a specific group of people live better or whatever, right? But you don't have a product. All you have is your enthusiasm and your story. And then what you're doing with this story, you are seducing in a way, in a positive way, team members who are going to join your team and believe in the same story as you do. And then once you start working on a product, you're seducing investors with your storytelling, customers, early customers, etc. So the power of storytelling is undeniable, right? So that's where it all starts. So that is something that we've been working on in terms of like motivating everyone. And I am proud to say that most of the stakeholders in the region really responded well to this. So this gives me a very healthy dose of optimism in terms of like what the region could be in the future, right? And then just to go back, so stories, they actually are almost like a mental virus, right? So they exist in our minds, you know, but when you have groups, like ecosystem groups of people, then these stories, they shape the group narrative, you know, and then this group narrative forms group beliefs. And beliefs have a very transformative power. They actually affect our actions, you know, and then our actions change the world around us, right? So that's where everything starts with storytelling. And now if you roll back, for example, to like a top-down again, so we're now witnessing a moment where Europe is actually trying to rediscover, to redefine itself as a global player, not only geopolitically, but also in terms of like business, global business, right? And this is where we have suddenly some new policies, we have talks about the single market, all these things, which are very important, you know, but that's not all. You know, this is a top-down approach. If we go bottom-up, you know, and we say, okay, let's zoom in on specific regions, and how can we, as a smaller unit, participate in this? This is where I see that Limburg has a lot of potentials. In fact, some previous reports, I don't have the exact titles or year, but it was a few years ago, there was like a report from EU about Limburg and how much potential it has, and that this is one of the, I think, seven regions in Europe that EU should be focusing more and helping it develop, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of waiting for this help, I think we should do our own like a grassroots initiative and just like start from the bottom up.
Right. Why do you think that the EU says that this region has so much potential?
I'm unsure. It's a mystery to me in terms of what are their criteria. But as someone who lives here for the past 6 years, I do see that there was like this whole evolution of a region from like a mining industry, and then the mines were closed, and then people had to rediscover themselves again, you know. And I believe that, you know, like we have neighboring regions like Eindhoven where they have much stronger ecosystem just because they started sooner and they had Philips to be like a central, like center of gravity there. So we do not have such a strong center of gravity, which also allows us certain liberty, because then they just they started as focusing on electronics, you know, hardware, things like that. While here, things went a little bit differently. They went into like a direction of health technology, food production, things like that. Of course, they are important aspects, but the main potential here that I see is in the international students, sorry, in students in general, not only international students. Why I use the word international is because, like, at Maastricht University, like, I think more than half of the students are coming from abroad. Mm. This gives us a very colorful ecosystem, right? It's like a very colorful environment. And then all these things put together, they have a certain richness in it, right? So this is something we can utilize. And let's not forget the fact that Limburg is having a huge, almost certain, it's almost certain that that it's going to be a center for Einstein's telescope, mm-hmm. right? So I've been talking to the head of business development from the CERN accelerator, right? And the fact how much it changed the whole region there, how much it affected the local economy, and it set like the whole new group of businesses in motion, and like the whole ecosystem flourished. So this is something that is one of the indicators, I believe, not only for me, but for the EU also, that this is a region that you should be paying attention to, right? Okay, we are lucky enough that the ground and the terrain here is actually spot on in terms of what they need for the telescope, right? And you see that already there are some movements, initial research, and people are almost behaving as if it is coming here. So that's a very good, like, positive indicator, right? And I believe that there are some other things in the region that we should be focusing on. So when I was scanning the whole thing, like, okay, let's see what are the missing ingredients here. You know, like, you have this like whole evolution from one person and an idea all the way to having a successful business, right? And there are certain steps that you have to go through. And of course, some people do it fully alone, right? But it's better if you have support from your ecosystem, right? So now I believe that we have this early, like, ideation category and incubation program. It's decent. It can always be better, but it's on a very, very high level at this moment. And then we have one gap, and then we have Brighton's ecosystem after that. And this gap consists of two elements. One is I don't want to say weak, but almost missing investment scene in the region. So we need more investors here. And then also another aspect is like a very, very good acceleration program, right? Mm. So these are the things that we as an ecosystem can help contribute to, you know, like, okay, let's do this together and let's help everyone who pops up in the network, you know, and let's help them become a successful node or participants in this game, right? Mm. So these are the two ingredients that are missing, if you ask me, and I've been actively working on developing both of them. And then I believe that there are a certain new sectors, industry sectors, that we should start supporting. Right. And based on like real world data that I'm gathering on a daily basis, right, I believe it's biotech. I believe it's further helping health tech in like implementing new technologies. And then related to Einstein's telescope, it's like the whole new space economy. Mm. Everything related to this. And I'm not talking about just sending the rockets to space. I'm talking about how can the innovation related to the space sector be applied back here. So more like a downstream approach. And then, of course, fintech and circular economy. So these are the sectors where I am going to be actively working in the next period to stimulate young people to be more involved and like come up with the new ideas, new solutions in this sector. And of course, you want to notice that I haven't mentioned AI at all. Why? It's only natural that it's going to be applied in all of these sectors. So we should not fall into a trap of what happened with the blockchain, where the thing existed for the sake of itself, right? It's a tool. And we should apply it anywhere we can, if it makes sense, of course. Yeah. So, yeah.
So you talk a lot about like the missing points that we have in the ecosystem, but also everything that's mm-hmm. going right. What's your take on the importance of having money and the availability of money for startups when they get into this next step of their life cycle in the ecosystem?
Well, I believe it's of the utmost importance, but this is where I would like to make this a little bit more interactive. You as a startup founder, what can you tell me about this? Because, you know, like I can assume from my personal experience, I can assume what the others need, but talking to others and asking them what they really need, yeah, you know, and what are your problems, that's something I really would like to hear.
Yes, so the experience that I've had with looking for money, at least in the region of Limburg itself, is that there are a lot of people who are wealthy and who have money, but they're not readily available to do investments in early stage startups, mm-hmm, or you don't know where to find them. Mm-hmm. So they're not really advertising, hey, I'm an angel investor, hey, I do this, I do that. It's kind of, you need to know someone who knows someone who then knows that person, and then you can get in. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we go to Eindhoven, it's much more open, saying, hey, I'm here, I actually did something with a company, I have a lot of money, I'm available to invest. Or if you go to Rotterdam or Amsterdam or Berlin, these bigger cities, there's a lot more money that, I wouldn't say there's a lot more money, it's just, it's more shown kind of thing. You know where to find them in an mm-hmm easier way than you do in Maastricht at the moment, in the region here.
You nailed it, actually. So that's one, let's say, aspect of this problem is activating local regional money, right? And we believe that we can also in the next period we're actually going to focus on this, on motivating family offices, family businesses to participate as investors in the region through something that is still not fully ready, but through a certain like program, you know, that's going to exist for the early stage startups, especially early stage, right? When you're coming to like a seed round or Series A, then there is like much more access to money everywhere, right? But when you're in like this ideation, like early stage, you're like, maybe I have an MVP, maybe I'm working on it and I need some money to finish it, but I do have a proof that there is a market for this. This is where the money is missing. So motivating local money, but also bringing external money here, that is one of my focuses, you know, and not only because then there is more money, but bringing external actors here is actually going to raise the level of competitiveness, you know, like then you're not so comfortable as a local investor in saying like, oh, I get to cherry pick and the rest, you know, bye bye. But in a sense, when you have more investors, then you have competitors here with the boots on the ground, right? And this is what I want to achieve. And we already, it's too early to talk about these things, so this might be for some other future podcasts, you know, but there are many moves there. And I believe that probably within a year we're going to have a little bit more structure in terms of like investment program here. But also like having local actors being more like active, bringing external actors here, and also establishing like a full-blown collaborations with other centers, you know. And I'm not talking only about like Eindhoven, I'm talking about collaboration across the border with Aachen and Cologne, you know, since recently also Essen. So then another collaboration that we have recently established with one of the largest Scandinavian accelerators. So there are many things that will happen this year and many actual events where they're going to participate here that are going to be almost like a pilot program for us to see how is our thesis that bringing external actors here is going to drive change in terms of investment, right? Yeah, so that's.
I think also the gap you pointed out of the investments and the accelerator, mm-hmm, like those two problems, I think that actually speaks volumes about our experience as well.
Yes,
where we've had either MVPs or things that have seemed to really be working as well, mm-hmm, and then we're just missing the money and maybe the guidance to bridge the gap to then go to the larger institutions, yes, to do these, yeah, bigger things, and I think that's something. I mean, you've been running into that wall for like a year now or something, yep, like this.
Yeah.
And it's something that also stunted the growth of Disorder as well.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you believe is missing in the region besides these two ingredients?
I think Sebastian touched on it, but it goes beyond just in the world of investors, but it's visibility of, mm-hmm, where you can find help and how to get help.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing where, of course, it comes down to you as an individual as well, going out there and trying to look for things. Like, you don't need to sit back and do nothing either. But I think just having a bit more awareness of what's actually out to play for. Mm. But I think that's also a natural result of having a more active ecosystem. So,
indeed. Right? It's like an emergent.
Exactly. Exactly. It's one of those things. I think it's always the chicken and the egg a bit, where you gain some visibility to make the thing more engaged, and then you get more visibility on the back end as well.
I also think for me, it also there is money available already here in the region, but a lot of the money that you would get from that has to be spent in the region as well, which makes it very difficult for a company like what I have, when we're doing heavily engineering factors, and we don't really have a engineering-based university here in Maastricht. It's more business-based and science-based. So you would have to go to Aachen, to the RWTH, you would have to go to Eindhoven, which is right outside of a region, but you can't with the money that you would get. So I think this needs to be also accepted that, yes, we can get the funding going here, but you're allowed to spend some of that elsewhere as well than just this region.
That is another thing that we need to... Like, we need to work on our narrative and storytelling and explaining the local money and explaining them that what is good for a wider ecosystem here, including when you mentioned Aachen and the others. Like, what is good for this is also locally good for us here, you know. So, you know, like, it's just an imaginary border. You know, there's nothing else. You know, it could easily be that Aachen was a part of Limburg, and then what? It would be fine, right? So it's about imaginary borders, and these things change, right? So it's a matter of being active, like maybe leading by example. You know, like, even if you bring another investor and this investor invests, regardless of the fact that you might spend the money in Germany, right? And then them actually seeing a real-life scenario or real-life case where, okay, this went well, actually, you know? So there's a lot to be changed. I'm not saying that the things are bad. I think there is a lot of potential here in the region. So we all need to work together on this. And then if things get stuck somewhere, you know, they get stuck usually because people either don't believe, or maybe you're really doing something wrong. So then you have to re-examine yourself also.
Yeah.
So yeah, everyone needs to be a little bit more flexible and more ambitious. Right? Mm. That's my 5 cents there.
I think that also comes down a lot to changing the stories by which we live, because those beliefs translate into actions. So how have you gone upon actually changing the story here? What does that process look like?
Again, I can like go and step on a stage and like preach to hundreds of people. It's not really going to have some extreme effect, you know. And that's why I believe like setting a bunch of like these small fires in the network, where I one-on-one like work on like a one-on-one approach, where I actually say, okay, let's work on you as an entrepreneur yourself, you know, and then I work on another one with another one and with the third one. And then when you work with hundreds of them, you know, like things start happening, you know. It's not no longer like, oh, like we have to do this massive campaign of like promoting something or brainwashing anyone. Just like small practical moments and practical small moves, right? And this is where it comes back again to people, to individuals, right? And then this is something I keep repeating to everyone. I keep repeating like a parrot. And when we're talking about individual people, what is the thing that makes you an entrepreneur? Like, did you ever wonder about this? Like, it's like, oh, I'm like ambitious, or I am innovative, or I'm ready to like step in and do stuff. What is actually an entrepreneur? You know, so my... Like, it's not like my wisdom, it's like just a result of like listening to other smart people, you know. It's like everyone has dreams. Every single person on the planet has dreams. Some people just dream about having like a super nice house at, I don't know, like French Riviera or whatever, or a nice boat, right? Some people have like larger dreams. Some people want to change the world. Some people want to change Maastricht or whatever, you know. But everyone has dreams. But entrepreneurs are actually ready to do something about it, right? So if you actually take your dreams, you know, and you convert them into plans. And then you actually take your plans and convert them into actions. That's how you actually change things, right? For yourself and for the others. So being ready to like start with your dreams, make plans, do whatever it takes, and then actually make a change. This is what makes an entrepreneur be an entrepreneur. And in this sense, it's actually one of the most inspiring things you could do. You know, like just take, for example, let's talk about outside of the scope of the business world. Let's talk about doctors, right? So I believe that the most successful medical experts are entrepreneurial. They actually make the like breakthroughs or like new procedures or whatever by being ready to like explore, to like dig in and see how can I disrupt, how can I change this for the better of everyone. This is essence of entrepreneurship. And that's why it's very inspiring to work. I have an opportunity now to be a team member, like a side team member of like 100 startups. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's very cool. I think that also, I mean, I think you are very much one then, because I mean, in conversations we've had, we already see the difference that you've been making since March in terms of activating people and doing things. That's something that does.
There's a big difference already.
Yeah, it does get passed through the student startup community. That's like, oh yeah, but Predach is kicking butt. but it's very true. And I think also that's, I think it's a very nice way to define what it entails, because if I'm honest, sometimes I cringe at the word. Because it's tied with, let me sell you my course and show you an ad where I'm driving around in a rented Lamborghini and you don't have to work for what you need to do. You sit back, you have passive income. That's kind of the stereotypical, like, satirical entrepreneur on the internet.
And I know. I'm aware.
Yeah. So I usually cringe at the word, but I think the way that you've defined it is something that's far more inspiring and I think accurate for the real ones.
That's actually another like warning from me. It's like, be aware of the people who are trying to sell you recipes. You know, like there is no one size fits all. Of course, there are some meaningful steps that you have to take. Like, for example, in the acceleration program, and you are like, okay, I have to go through these stages, but like, it is your personal evolution that actually really matters, and like your personal understanding. Because if everyone would follow the same recipes, we would end up like a army of zombies. You know, that's not the way to change things. Yeah. You know, so yeah, be aware of so-called
of course
like, experts with their special programs.
And, like the Borg in Star Trek or something.
I would just like to add one more thing there, and this is something when I start talking about people and then like entrepreneurs. But there is one thing that I always start with when I'm talking with the founders, right? And that's the importance of the early team, right? This is something that is so crucial. It's much more important than actually money. I feel your pain. I know how it is, right? But having a good team is a much more important prerequisite than actually having money. You know, when you have a group of people who share your beliefs and your enthusiasm about the thing, there are so many things that are possible. And that's actually what separates startups from large corporates. You know, like large corporates are moving slowly. They have 5-year plans, strategies, approved budgets, you know, like sometimes even overpaid employees, you know, things like that. When you're like foolish and hungry and you're just starting, you know, like you're much more agile, you can actually compete with them. That's actually the only edge that we have, you know. They have the money, right? But you have ability to pivot any second you want. You can explore and say, "Ooh, I believed that this is the thing that we should be doing. This is the product." But in the process, we realized we were wrong. But we learned something else, and now we're going to pivot in another direction and like change our approach, right? That's not something that the large guys can do. You know?
And I think definitely with the team, what you're saying is it's so crucial to get a good team together in the beginning. And I know we've both built teams now for our companies, and we were 9 people at some point at Unshackled, and we've had extremely intelligent people who just weren't a fit for the company. Mm-hmm. Not that they weren't good at what they were doing, it just didn't fit with us. So it's taking a lot of time to actually get to boil down to the team that now is, okay, this here we can do it with now for the next steps.
Yeah, it's almost like a process of like crystallizing.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, that's true. But then once you have it, it's the most important like foundation for yes. your business. Mm. You know, let's talk for a second, like when you are talking to a new investor, right? Everyone has a specific opinion, like, okay, this is what the investor wants to hear. This is the structure of my pitch deck. This is how I'm going to impress them. But talking one-on-one with them, you know, and like asking them, like, what do you really care about? They always start with the team. They're looking and they're like young, ambitious, foolish guys who want to change something, right? Do I believe in them? Not in the product. The product comes second because they know that your product is going to evolve, change, you might pivot, right? But the team stays. So do I believe in the team? So that's why it's essential. Yeah. When you have the good team, good idea, you prove the market. I don't know, like sometimes, yeah, you have to go outside of the region to get the money, but hopefully that will change, yeah.
Okay, Fred, we've spoken a lot about the work here that you're doing in the ecosystem and your philosophy behind it. And to me, what it seems like it boils down to is putting people together to leverage and extract potential.
Indeed, yeah.
And looking forward, I'm curious, what are your plans in terms of continuing from today on to continue leveraging that potential and creating the region that you see before you?
Yeah, and it's so that's a very good and it's also a very tricky question. I do believe in power of improvisation and like jumping in, understanding the circumstances, trying something, observing the results, and then like getting back to the drawing table. Okay, we made some mistakes. This is the good part. This is the bad part. And then like try again. But there are some obvious steps first to take, right? So my first immediate step is also something that is actually a very important announcement that I want to make today. And that's how do we solve one of those two missing ingredients, and that's the lack of an acceleration program. So in the past months, behind the closed doors, our whole team, we've been working on a new acceleration program, but with very, very ambitious goals. So we are like setting our target like very high, you know. So what are we going to start from second half of April is like a pilot accelerator, fully based on Y Combinator approach. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it soon, but like we said, okay, instead of trying to build the whole thing without actually being able to interact with the startups and seeing what are the gaps that we need to fill in, you know, like this tailor-made individual approach, we said, okay, let's start with a pilot program. Let's onboard 6-7 startups and go through like 8 weeks pressure cooker, right? So the entry criteria for this will be that either you are very, very far away with your functional prototype, like as a bare minimum, and a very clear proof that there is a market for this. This is a bare minimum, but the ideal entrant would be someone who has a MVP and wait list or some early customers. Yeah. And what we want to do is we want to put you through this 8 weeks of almost like a nightmare pressure cooker, where we want you to fully focus on three aspects. And one is your marketing strategy and like sales playbook. The second one is investor readiness. And the third one is refining your products. Right. So these three things, we said, okay, let's do the like a agile approach, and let's like have a like a really short like cycles of like 1 week where we focus on product. Then the next week we focus on marketing, sales playbook, right? Then the third week we focus on investment. For this, you need really, really good mentors. So I'm proud to say that I managed to recruit some really, really nice investors. So really nice mentors. So one of them is from Scandinavia. He's a double startup founder, double exit guy who is now an investor. So he's gonna help participants to like improve their investment thesis, like, oh, okay, this is what we really need. This is there is a clear proof. This is what the investors are expecting, you know, and we are ready, you know. So that's his goal. Then we have another guy who also works actively with Startup Bootcamp, and he's going to focus on marketing and sales. Then I will be a mentor for the product development. This is where I can really contribute a lot. So every week, every Monday, we're going to start with a workshop for everyone focused on, let's say, marketing. Right? And then at the end of the workshop, based on like individual like problems that every startup has, we're going to give you tasks. And from that moment, the group approach stops. And then on Wednesday, you have one-on-one with a mentor, and then every Friday you are going to be pitching, but not your startup, but your progress for that week, and collecting feedback not only from us but also from the rest of the group, right? And then next week we focus on something else and something else, and then on the after 8 weeks we're going to wrap up with a demo day where we're going to invite investors on the first spot, and then also other stakeholders who might be able to help you. And for this, we already got indication that Brightlands is more than welcome to be a host for this demo day. So this is a kind of a big deal for us because, you know, like I said, getting your hands dirty, jumping in, doing this, and just like measuring the effect of it. Right? So in fact, a second announcement is that for this accelerator program, I would like to invite your company to be a part of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, more than welcome. You actually deserve it. So
thank you.
Yeah. So that's one. That's one important announcement. Yeah. In terms of the other initiatives, it's just like we're gonna for this year, 2025. We're just gonna keep doing what we're doing, improving the Brightlands Startup Challenge, and evolving our incubation program further, and this thing where we need to bring more and more investors to the region. I believe that the acceleration program, successful acceleration program, is gonna make us be look pretty and, you know, sexy for the investors. So that's what we want to achieve with the acceleration program also.
Nice. Yeah. A beautiful red dress.
Indeed.
With nice lipstick on.
Yeah. Wonderful. It sounds exciting.
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
I think that's going to change a lot for the ecosystem.
I really started thinking, I was like, this would be great for Sebastian. Yeah. So I was like,
that would be very great for us right now.
No, exactly. All right, Fredag, thank you for the announcement. I hope for the listeners that they enjoy, and maybe there's some potential participants there. Who knows?
Feel free to reach out, of course. Yeah.
As a closing tradition, we do ask our guests to bring an object of personal significance. We're curious, what did you bring today and why?
Yeah. Let me say first why. And sure. Then I'm going to show what I brought. What makes a successful startup founder, first of all, it's of course the readiness to jump in and like take action, right? The enthusiasm, like being ready to collaborate. But there is one more thing that is very important and that we constantly fail to overlook, and that's grit and perseverance, right? And this is something that I've seen coming originally. I'm from the Balkans. I'm from like East, like metaphorical East Europe, right? Something that is lacking in the West is like this sense of being unsafe, and you have to move. You need to have grit and perseverance to like succeed, right? And I've been hearing this also from Scandinavian partners, where they even have a much more complex problem, right? Because of all the subsidies, all the whole support system makes everyone soft.
Yes.
You know? So I have this tradition for me since like a while ago, and it is like there is one object that you carry with yourself almost every day, or unless you really forget about it, and that's your keychain, right? So I mark important stages in my life, right, by having a very specific keychain, you know, like when I was launching my company, I actually had that pilot thingy that you pull to eject, you know,
right? Before flight.
Before flight. Yeah. So I always have something for a specific stage. So Then there was a moment where I entered like the business arena and I was like, okay, now I have to like fight, right? Not really fight, but it's more like I have to be engaged on multiple fronts, right? And this is where I understood myself the importance of grit and perseverance. And for me, it is represented in this small metal chain that's actually like a super proud and super confident dog, right? But it's almost like a tiny terrier dog, right? So it has a character of a huge dog, like I'm the main guy in the room, right? But regardless of the fact that it's a small dog, right? So this is what I carry with me every day as a reminder, you know, you are only underdog if you define yourself as one. Mm-hmm. So that's my message. Don't define yourself as an underdog. It will change all your actions in the future. So, yeah.
I like that.
I like that a lot as well.
Yeah. As someone who's felt like an underdog and then switched it around and sometimes fallen back and then switched it around, it does make a massive
difference.
Honestly,
we all have been there.
We all have it, yeah. That's very true. Yeah. That's very nice. Thank you for bringing that.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Indeed. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure meeting with you. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
For the invitation.
Thanks, Fredda. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to our episode. If you want to connect with our guest personally, then give us a follow on LinkedIn at First Moves. We also have an Instagram at First Moves Podcast. And lastly, we ask you to leave a review. This will enable us to bring better guests on board and give you better content in the future. Have a nice day.